Okay, great. Thank you very much. It's great to be here. The topic is MDS, and just a couple of clarifying comments. This is about the U.S. mortgage banks. What I'm going to do in terms of an outline, I'm going to say a few words about the mortgage market in the U.S. And then title of my talk is Where's the Option? So the problem is, how are mortgage-backed securities valued today? And what I'm going to show you, there is no, even though there is a mortgages in the U.S. can be prepaid and refinanced at any time. So there's a very valuable option. The technology that's being used doesn't explicitly value this optionality. And you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And then I'll talk about a new way of doing things. And if there is time, I would like to show you an example of how this works, and if not, that's okay too. I'll just answer some questions about implementation. So that's the agenda. Now, to get things going, let me tell you a little bit about the size of the U.S. market. The home mortgage market, this is single family, multifamily, totals about $10 trillion. These numbers come from the Mortgage Bankers Association. I got them a few weeks ago. Last year, the origination was $2.5 trillion. And of the $10 trillion, $6 trillion has been converted into what's called mortgage-backed securities. I'll tell you, for those of you who don't know what they are, I'll explain them to you very briefly. And the topic of that I'll be focusing on are the so-called agency MBS, fixed coupon agency MBS, the Fannies, the Freddies, the Ginnies, and the volume there is $4 trillion. So just as a point of reference, the treasury market in the U.S. is $4.5 trillion. So we're talking about something very, very big. Of course, what you hear nowadays is the subprime. I'm not going to touch on the subprime market. This is just the agency, the high-quality mortgages. In terms of the, again, for those of you who are not familiar, in Canada, the standard structure is a 25-year amortization with a five-year balloon, and essentially it's very hard to prepay in the first 3 years. There are penalties. So there's very, very little optionality that the home buyers have in Canada. Now, in contrast, the U.S. market is very rich in optionality. I'm going to be talking first and foremost about the 30-year fixed market. That's the old market. There are all kinds of variations. I'll touch upon those. But the basic structure is a 30-year fixed mortgage market, which can be prepaid at any time. That's the key concept that I'm going to be focusing on. And how do you value that prepayment option? But even at origination, there are all kinds of variations. So, for example, if you're looking at the 30-year rate today, it's today about roughly 6% in the U.S., but if you're willing to pay some points up front to the lender, to the bank, you can maybe get 5.5% or 5.75%. So you can pay points and get a lower rate. Or if you don't want to pay your closing costs, they say, fine, you don't have to pay any closing costs, but then you end up with an above-market rate. It's very hard to determine which is the right choice mathematically because of this optionality. So, but my focus, I'll be talking about a lot of things, but for the purposes of this presentation, it's about prepayment option and refinancing option. That's the key notion. And of course, when you have a lot of optionality, the market charges for this refinancing option. So just to give you some idea, how much do they charge? Well, I told you today a 30-year fixed rate is about 6%. If there was no refinancing option, it would be probably about 5.5%. Okay, so now you have a mortgages, but most mortgages are not retained by the banks. They are sold, and they become mortgage-backed securities. And what the originator, the bank, can do is convert these. You get a pool of similar mortgages, convert them into a mortgage-backed security, and the way it's done is if the mortgages qualify, there are some guarantors, and the best ones are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Those are the big ones. and then you also have Ginnie Mae, who, and then there's something called private label. But it, the key is that out of these pool of mortgages, we can create securities. And I mentioned to you there are 6 billion of those and 4 billion are agency MBS. And then those trade. And typically, the mortgage-backed securities, the coupon, the interest rate, they pay semi-annually, and their interest rate is in a half a point interval, so 5.5%, 6%, 6.5%, and so on. That's the structure. Now, let me now tell you a little bit about valuation. This is a story about valuing securities. And I want to give you a little bit of a background. The technology used, and those of you who work in fixed income may have heard of this notion of option-adjusted spreads. How many of you have heard about OES? Okay, all right, great, most of you know it. So it was introduced in 86, you know, the classic Holy paper, and people started applying it, and it's used very broadly today. Whether you look at bonds or mortgage-backed securities, they are valued using this OES technology. I won't get into much detail, but there are two steps. You have to put in a yield curve and a volatility, and from that you have to create a tree, a lattice, and then once you have a lattice, you can value securities. These are the two things. You can also put this engine into reverse, and you can say I can put in a price, and from the price I can compute an option-adjusted spread. But I'm going to be focusing on the one where you try to value things instead of figuring out what the spread is. And I want to give you some idea on how long these valuations take. We have a lot of data, and so speed becomes a very important dimension of fixed income today. And if you go back about 1917 years, when we had 386 processors, this is about bonds, straight callable bonds. So how long would it take? We had 386, and if you did not have a math co-processor, just to set up this tree would take several hours. And then you would be lucky to value a security in a few seconds. That's what used to be the speed then. Today, in a minute, you could do roughly 500 of these trees. And in terms of valuation, once you have a tree, you can value 80,000 callable bonds. Or if the bonds are not callable, you can do 500,000 straight bonds. That's the speed that we have today in straight bond valuation. That's not what I'm talking about, but I want you to get a sense of the benchmark, of what's available. So remember this number, 80,000 callable bonds per minute. Now I'm going to switch and talk about MBS, which is the topic. How many of you have ever used a system that values MBS? Some of you have, so if you disagree with what I'm going to say here, please do. If you talk to, I mentioned some systems such as the Bloomberg or the Yield Book, if you know, these are standard systems. They are lucky to do 100 per minute. 100 is the number. Compare this to the 80,000 that I just mentioned. I'm not talking about CMOs. I'm talking about pass-through, standard MBS. The technology, instead of being this recursion, which is standard for bonds, is Monte Carlo simulation. That's one of the problems. But there are two basic problems that I want to talk about conventional standard approach to valuing MBS. One is that it's slow because it's Monte Carlo, but there is something which is much more troublesome, which is the way in which prepayment models are handled, prepayments. You see, when you remember I said all the mortgages can be prepaid immediately. So when rates go down, they start prepaying. And somehow you need a way of describing what happens if rates go lower and how these mortgages prepay. And current prepayment models, and I'll tell you in a moment, I'll give you some examples so you see I'm not trying to mislead you. They are not based on any scientific scholarly principles. They are ad hoc methods, and they have been, and I used to be at Salomon Brothers back in the 80s. Salomon was the leader in this, and the technology hasn't changed since 1981 or 1979, as far as I can tell. It's all these statistical ways of backward-looking things of modeling historical prepayments and then trying to say what's going to happen going forward. There are several things wrong with this. One, as a scientist, you see, it's not satisfactory if you cannot explain why certain things happen. It's only statistical. But what is more troublesome as a practical, as a user, is that you continuously have these new and improved models. So there are firms that specialize in coming out with prepayment models. And every 6 months, they have a new model. So if they had a new, a solid, robust approach, you wouldn't need new models all the time. If you're studying finance or financial engineering, and if you want looking for a job, I mean, get into the prepayment modeling. There are more and more people doing prepayment modeling, and it's not going anywhere. It's not getting any better. This ongoing release of new models just keeps on continuing. Anybody wants to disagree with that? All right. You disagree, Doug. Yeah. You don't disagree. Okay. 775 prepayment models? Okay. And you wonder, what was wrong with the first 774 when you hear that? So what I'm going to try to do here is come up with a completely new way of thinking about prepayment modeling. More precisely, refinancing. How do you think about refinancing? Here's something that I took out. It's a standard approach in what people use is they have these S-shaped curves. They say, this, if you cannot, you probably cannot read it, it's a refinancing incentive, and the bigger incentive you have as you move from left to right, the higher the speed is at which people refinance. This is not for one class of people, this is for four different classes of people, how they refinance, and I don't know, if you say, where does it come from, it looks more like black magic than anything. This is out of a standard book that Luc Breyer wrote at Salomon Brothers. But this is a standard S-shaped curve, and if you don't know what it is, it's okay. I'm not going to spend much time on it. Just read up on prepayments. I'll tell you what's wrong with these models. Again, they are just saying, you tell me what the yield curve is, and I will give you the rate at which things refinance. And how you make that connection, I have no idea. But here's what you would expect from a good model, and I'll tell you what you don't get out of the conventional models. So you would like to estimate market values and price response, and I'm thinking about trading and risk management in a sensible way, and you want to be, and this is my focus, interest rate driven refinancings. How do you model those realistically? And again, I'm just repeating myself, but because conventional models are not based on financial principles, they cannot do this, and you have this short half-life, it's 6 months, a year. 774 is the number. Okay. And so you have all these people developing prepayment models, and now I'm going to mention here a few very simple, and I hope you will agree with me, very, very practical questions, and I hope you'll agree with me that the conventional models can't answer any of these questions. So, for example, we always hear about refinancing not being efficient. That is, some people do it too early, some people do it too late. All right. So clearly, if everybody did this efficiently, investors would charge more for the security, the yields would, the investor would pay less, the yields would go higher. How much higher? Well, because the models are based on statistical information from the past, you have no idea how much higher it would be because there has never been a situation when everybody refinanced optimally. But if you had an option-based model, you could answer it, and I will show you later on. So it turns out to be about 10, 15 basis points higher. That's the answer. You'll see how I got those. Transaction costs. So how much is transaction cost today? Well, every time you refinance, you have transaction cost. The transaction cost today is about 1.5 points, roughly. Some cases, it used to be higher. It's coming down. But if it went to 0.5 point? Nobody knows how to handle that because this has never happened. There's no data. We need more data, but we don't have it. What happens if you, if a borrower said, you know what, I promise not to refi for the first 5 years of those 30 years. I want to get a lower rate. How much should you save? Again, you can't model these because you need options. And the approach doesn't have options. Okay. So, here's the message that I would like to convey. If you want to approach mortgage-backed MBS valuation in a sensible way, first and foremost, you've got to understand mortgages. Those are the building blocks. And once you understand mortgages, there's a hope of doing MBS. If you don't understand mortgages, you get a house of cards and you get the ongoing release of new and improved models. But it will never convert you to anything sensible. So understand mortgages and the rest will follow. And I will show you, so what I'm going to do next is tell you a little bit about mortgage refinancing, how to think about refinancing. I have a focus on a long-term fixed coupon mortgage. And then once you understand it, I will use that as a building block to value mortgage-backed securities. The key is, by the way, in terms of going forward, first and foremost, we have to understand what is optimal refinancing. The housing finance literature, I'm talking about the academic literature, is full of references to the fact that mortgagors don't refinance optimally. And talk about inefficiency. There is not a single paper anywhere in the academic literature that tells you what's optimal. So you'll be hard-pressed to say what's suboptimal if you don't know what's optimal. So first we have to understand what's optimal, then we can talk about suboptimal. Now the technology I'm going to use is built on standard bond analysis, not MBS analysis. And the people in the bond area seem to know all these things, but somehow something has been lost between the people who do mortgages here and the people who do straight bonds and derivatives over here. And I'm still trying to figure out how this could have happened, but you can check it out and you'll find that I'm not exaggerating. So, let's talk mathematically about optimum refinancing of a mortgage. How do you think about it? Well, if you know about bonds, you can think about a mortgage as a 30-year callable amortizing bond. That's what it is. From the perspective of the homeowner, standard callable amortizing bond. The call price, what's the call price? Well, it can be refinanced without any penalty. But if you want to refinance, you have to pay an additional transaction cost, such as the 1 point or 2 points or 1.5 points. You can think about mortgage rates. They change all over the place. And you can, best way to think about rates today is to have a benchmark such as the Treasury, or nowadays probably the most convenient benchmark is the swap curve, the LIBOR swap curve, and then have some kind of a spread to the benchmark, and that's how we do it. So think of mortgage rates as a spread to a benchmark. Use a volatility which is appropriate for swaption vols, and I can talk about it. And ideally, if you know what you're doing, you should refinance when this option that you have, the refinancing option, is worth more than if you exercise it and if you don't exercise it. This gets into the whole issue of optimum option exercise. If you look at the academic literature on option exercise, you don't see anything. You see auto and option valuation, but the actual exercise actually is a very complicated thing. Why? Because of transaction costs. Most people don't look at that there's a cost associated with exercising an option, and that reduces the value of the option. I'm not going to get into it, but if anybody's interested, I wrote a paper last fall in Financial Engineering News on suboptimal option exercise, which is a very rich, very interesting area as far as I'm concerned. And it comes up in the area of mortgages. What happens if you exercise too early? What if you exercise too late? I encourage you to think about the problem if you're so inclined. So, what's optimal? How should you think about it? And here's the magic formula, if I may say. This is the notion of efficiency. And here's what you should do. If you refinance a mortgage, you get some PV savings. That's obvious. You save $100 a month, and you can PV it, and that's your savings. That's easy. You give up an option on the mortgage that you have just refinanced, because now you don't have it anymore. But you pick up an option on the new mortgage, because it immediately, like it or not, it can be refinanced immediately. So the right way to think about this formula is to look at, here's what I save, and here's what I give up, the change in option value, and I should exercise the option only if this is either one or very close to one. That's the idea. That's the efficiency. Don't do it if you get only 60% or 70%. There's a lot of literature on this, and I can show it to you later on and talk about it. Okay, so this tells you what the optimum time is to refinance a bond or a mortgage, or this is what's used by Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae for calling bonds, and you can use it for mortgages too. Here is an example. You probably cannot see it from the back, but you can actually build a calculator. This is not for the homeowner, to decide whether or not to refinance, and it says, oh, here's a mortgage that has 26 years left. It has a 6% coupon annual rate. I can today get a new mortgage at 560. I can pay a point upfront as a fee. I have upfront costs of $1,500 per $100,000. Should I do it? Should I not do it? And then you go through the analysis and you can say, well, I'm saving $46 a month, big deal. But most importantly, your PV savings amount to $1,500, that some of you can see in the front, but you give up in option value $2,000, so you get only 70%. So the answer is, no, you shouldn't do it. This has nothing to do with MBS. Keep in mind, this is strictly mortgages. So you shouldn't do it. And when should you do it? Just to give you some idea, you can work it out so it shows. Just to give you some idea of how low should rates go, well, if your refunding cost is 1% of the face of the outstanding amount, you should do it when you save about 45, 50 basis points. But if your refunding cost is 2%, you should be saving roughly 70 basis points. The old rule of thumb used to be you should wait until you save up. This is in the U.S. again. Save when you saved about 200 basis points. You don't have to save anything like that. 70 basis points today is plenty to justify refinancing a mortgage. Okay, so I'm telling you the technology is there to determine what's the optimum time to refinance a mortgage. And I'm spending a lot of time on it, but this is the basis of everything that is going to follow. I haven't told you yet, but when you think about this concept, it can help you explain the prices of mortgage-backed securities. So, for example, you can say if the transaction cost is very low, that's here, well, let me not get into this. Just remember, the value of the transaction cost affects the refinancing, and the refinancing in turn affects the value of the mortgage back if it goes through. But let me just go on. And now I'm going to switch at this point from mortgages to mortgage-backed securities for the first time. So I'm going to describe a new way of doing it. It's not that new. Frank Fabozzi, some of you have heard of Frank, Dean Yang and I wrote a paper, published that in 2004, an option theoretic prepayment model for mortgages and mortgage-backed securities. And I'm going to describe roughly how that works, but it builds on what I have just told you. And here's the idea. Understand mortgages, the rest is going to be simple. So, we have actually, CLEAN is the name of the process, and it stands for Coupled Lattice Efficiency Analysis. Coupled lattice is because we talk about not a single lattice, not a single tree, but two trees. I'll show you momentarily what I mean by this. But they are perfectly correlated. So you have a mortgage rates, and we have two rates. We have rates for mortgages, and we have rates for mortgage-backed securities. Each has a spread to some benchmark, which is a swap curve. The mortgage rates determine when to refi. they generate the cash flows. The flows then, these cash flows flow through to the MBS, the coupon and the principal, and then you have to discount those, and that's where the MBS OES comes in. And that's it. Two lattices. So one to determine the mortgages refi. That's the lower lattice here, if you can see it. I'm sorry, the higher one, the refis, because that's a worse credit. The mortgages have worse credit than MBS. And the lower one is to discount the cash flows that flow to the MBS investor. That's the basic structure. Two lattices, a couple of lattices. Okay. So the only thing that may be new here that I'm going to tell you about is the way we model prepayment. First of all, if you talk to people who are familiar with mortgage spec, they say, oh yeah, we expect some kind of a turnover. That has nothing to do with interest rates. Just people move, people die, whatever. And they talk about the PSA, which is some kind of statistic, and they say, this is what we expect. And we can't add anything, but there's a deterministic model of turnover, which is just depletion of the pool. Nothing to do with interest rates. Now, the interesting part of what we're doing is the way in which we do refinancing. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this. And here's the point. We already know what's optimum. I told you what's optimum. That's easy to determine. Now, the problem is people will say, oh, but not that people don't refinance optimally. And I say, yeah, that's true. But once you know optimum, you can also know what's suboptimal. And you can talk about suboptimal behavior. So we talk about a wide, what we call a wide spectrum of refinancing behavior. So we talk about, we have this pool of mortgages and we have buckets. The people who know what they are doing, who do it optimally, we call them financial engineers. You remember that if you happen to be a financial engineer. They are the ones who do it optimally. Then we talk about leapers. What does that mean? People who do it too early. It turns out, by the way, I tell you right now, that's not an issue. Don't have to worry about leapers. Very few people would do it too early. Because it doesn't make sense, because they would lose money if they tried to do it too early. You can see that from the math. But the most important part is these laggards. These are the people who do it too late. Once you specified laggards or leapers or whatever, then the behavior is straightforward. You know when they are if you tell me what interest rates do, I'll tell you when they're going to refinance and we're done. But there are all these different pools and we have to put some distribution on them. By the way, I want to point out burnout, which refers to what happens to the cash flows after rates have declined. And what is observed in practice is that after rates have declined, and rates come back again and go down further, there's very little refinancing. The pool has burned out. And then there are special tools. Most prepayment models use some special techniques for dealing with this burnout. I just want to mention parenthetically that once you have specified fast and slower type of behavior, you don't need to do all this because the fastest people refinance first, so every time people refinance, whatever you have left is going to be slower by definition, right? That's how it works. So you don't have to worry about, you don't have to make special provisions for burnout. But I can get back to that later. Now, here's how we, the question is, how do you describe laggardly behavior? And this is kind of a very convenient way of describing it. I'll spend a moment on it. Each mortgagor is assigned what we call an imputed coupon, which represents his or her refinancing behavior. So suppose that you have a mortgagor, and the mortgage is a 7% mortgage, and I'll say, oh, your imputed coupon is 6%, which means that you behave as if you had a 6% mortgage. So what does that mean? Well, if you have a 6% mortgage, if you have a 7% mortgage, you should refinance by rates at around 640 or somewhere there. But if you have a 6% mortgage, you don't refinance until rates are around 550. So if a 7% mortgagor doesn't refinance until rates go to 550, when in fact he should have refinanced at 640, he's a laggard. That's how to parameterize it. this turns out to be extremely convenient when you set it up. And I will tell you right now, later on I will talk about the speed. This is a very convenient way of describing suboptimal behavior, because the speed that we get out of this, I will tell you right now, later on we can talk about it, we can do 10,000 variations per minute, as distinct from the 100 that people do. Why is it? Because we don't have to use Monte Carlo with this definition. We can treat the mortgages as if they were small bonds. We can use bond valuation technology instead of Monte Carlo. So we told you about laggardly behavior. Don't worry about it too much if you didn't follow me. And then we simply, and if you look at this paper that I mentioned, we put a distribution on laggard spreads. How badly do people behave? So all these, 50% of the people are assumed to be financial engineers that do it optimally. I told you before, you don't have to worry about people who do it too early, so I don't have anybody on the left. And then we have 25%, just a nice negative exponential distribution. And we have to have some people way out here, because some of them never refinance, and that causes a problem. So how do you describe it? So we have this negative exponential, and that's it. That's our prepayment model. So to summarize where we are, here are the inputs. I described to you the approach. There's a reference yield curve. I will show you what that looks like. We need an interest rate volatility. That's the standard stuff. For mortgagors, you need a turnover rate, which comes from somewhere. Everybody, that's nothing that we provide. Somebody else can tell you what it is. The important part is the mortgagor OES. That drives the refis. The refinancing cost, which is also an input, and then this distribution that I showed you. That's it. And for the MBS, you need an OES for discounting the cash flows. That's all. I'm going to give you an example. We can probably go through it, at least look at the highlights. We got a bunch of prices from a major dealer on September 5th last year. And I will show you how this model works, but here are the inputs. So we used, what do you use? For curve, you use a swap curve, the LIBOR curve. For volatility, you use something like 14%, which is like a good swaption vol. It was at the time. All right, now we get into turnover rate. But the industry today is about 8% per year. These are the people who just refinance. That's 125% of the so-called PSA rate. People are moving a lot more than they used to. But it's a pool-specific number. You may be higher, maybe lower. Okay, but here's the problem that the mortgagor OES, it's 70 basis points to the swap curve. And as I will explain to you later on, this comes right out of looking at the mortgage prices, but it's essentially, from a credit perspective, it is like a single-A credit, roughly. Single-A, triple-B credit. That's how you can think of it. That's the mortgagor OES. Refinancing cost, I use 1% here. The laggard distribution is that same distribution that we published in 2004, and we have never seen a need to change it. For MBS OES, it's 5 basis points to the swap curve. Now, if those of you who are in fixed income, you recognize these numbers as being consistent with OES for agency bonds, for debentures. But the way we get this, I will tell you right now, I mentioned it later anyway, we look at the so-called TBAs, if you know what, those are the things that are coming to the market that trade, and you can figure out the OES of those, and we subtract 5 basis points from that. That's what we do. So here are some numbers that we would do today too, but this is what we did. I'm going to show you some results. And here's the, so we got this 363 Fannie and Freddie MBS. And you can see the factor, this shows the distribution against the factor. The factor simply means what percent of the original amount is still outstanding. And it's very hard to model things once you have only about 5% of the original, or 10%, and some of you who are familiar with it know it. But what I want to tell you is that we have a bunch of pools here with very low factors, but most of them are fairly new. That's on this side, with factors in the neighborhood of 0.8 to 1, recent pools. And then we did some analysis using those inputs. And I'm showing you the distribution. And it's not great, it's not so bad. So we're looking at what we get from the model, and then we have the quote from the dealer. And we look at the difference. And this is zero. And sometimes we overestimate, and sometimes we underestimate. And I'm not going to take time here to get into details of where we missed, but I'm going to give you the basic results of what we missed. Just tell you. We did rather poorly with new high coupon MBS. The number we got was too low. The actual price that we got was lower than what the dealers were saying. I explained to you why. It was it's very clear why, but I just wanted to be candid about it. And it's basically because if somebody today gets a new mortgage and he's paying an above market rate, mortgage rates today are 6%. You come in, you say, well, this person is paying 6.5%. You say, why is he paying 6.5%? But he's a weak credit. He was lucky to get this. So somebody like that is less likely to refinance than somebody who has a good credit. And you have to sort of capture this somehow in the model. And we don't capture it. And so essentially the problem is you remember I said we use 70%, 70 basis point OAS for mortgage or credit, and that somehow is too low for the people who are entering the market today and they are getting an above market rate. So we have to do something about it. We also did rather poorly with the low factor MBS. They are hard to value, and I'm not going to get into it. But the key is, the concern is about these new above market mortgages. What can you do? So we said, all right, let's increase simply increase the mortgagor's OAS to reflect the weaker credit. Do something. It's a fudge, if you like. If you increase the mortgagor OAS, they are going to be less likely to refinance. And if they are less likely to refinance, the value of the mortgage is going to rise. It's going to go in the right way. These are above market rates, so they'll be closer to what the dealers are saying, presumably. And so the only adjustment I made to those assumptions that I showed you earlier is here. We said, all right, we called it the hockey stick approach. I guess in the tone of Tim Horton and Frank Mihalovich, it's a good name. We came up with this approach, and I found out I gave a talk on this at Freddie Mac, and they said, oh, we're doing something similar. So what we're doing is here, as the mortgage rates go higher, we apply a higher OAS. Everything else is exactly the same as I said before. And I'm going to show you some results of what happens. So I'm showing here for different coupon levels of the MBS, the dispersion, the difference between the model numbers and the quoted numbers, and you can see some nice pattern. There's no obvious bias. We continue to do badly. We didn't do anything to the low factor pools, but the fit improved quite a bit, as you can see here. And the low factors were still not very good, so I just took them out. There were 9 of them. And after you take them out, you get some beautiful, simple dispersion of the numbers that we get out of this very simple mechanical process with 6 parameters versus the numbers that come from this trade your desk for a major institution. I'm going to close by just giving you some statistics on these, if you can see it. So after... Initially, when I didn't make any adjustments, the average error was about 0.21, and the standard deviation was half a point, 0.53. After putting in this adjustment, the standard error dropped to about 0.05 of a point, and the standard deviation of the errors is less than 1/3 of a point, which I think is pretty good. Okay? This is on a given day, so you have to repeat this. But I'm just trying to give you some idea of the level of accuracy that you get out of a very, very simple 5 or 6 parameter fit. All right, how do you calibrate this? I'm going to be very quick here. I already told you for Fannie and Freddie pools, it's like the mortgagor is roughly like a single A credit, so it's about 70 basis points to the swap curve. I think it's a good number. Spreads move all over. If you look at the original paper that I wrote in 2004, I spoke about 90 basis points, but at that time, credit spreads were much wider than today. Today's spreads by historical standards are very, very, very tight, as I'm sure many of you know. So you have to monitor it, but not daily. You do it once a month. All other inputs, including the Lego distribution, are the same as the example. I already told you to get the OES for the mortgage-backed securities, do it from the TBA prices, and add subtract about 5 basis points. One question that people often ask is, all right, this is for MBS, but what if I'm looking at just a whole loans, just a pool of loans? How do I value those? Those are not securitized, they are illiquid. We've done a fair bit of work on those, and I will tell you what you should be doing. Don't do anything to the prepayment models, because not to the refinancing models, unless you have reason to believe that the mortgages are different. So you still get the same cash flows, but you should discount those at a higher rate. And if you talk about whole loans, which are illiquid, and there are some other issues, you should probably discount them 25 to 30 basis points higher, and you're going to get very good numbers. So that's basically the story. Again, just to wrap it up, is it a good model? Well, it certainly is better, I think, in terms of an approach than the conventional models, because it's consistent with everything else in fixed income, with swaps, with bonds, including volatility-dependent option exercise and the interpretation of OES. It means exactly the same thing. In fact, I've already alluded to this. The OES here is consistent with the OES that you get for agency debentures, roughly the same number. The prepayment behavior is completely inferred from the market. We never look at history. It's all implied volatilities, implied spreads. Don't need any data. Don't show me any data. I don't want to see any data from what happened last year or 5 years ago, 30 years ago. And again, because essentially you're valuing bonds, you can do recursion and not Monte Carlo. So the number we're getting is 10,000, roughly 10,000 per minute, not 100 per minute, which becomes pretty important when you're looking at a lot of data. And there's a lot of data. How much? Well, I'll give you some examples just to last exhibit. So this timing is kind of serendipitous. Yesterday, the sector, which is owned by the New York Stock Exchange, made an announcement that sector and a firm, G Market, which is in Toronto actually, and we have this joint venture to price 850,000 agency MBS daily. We start doing it. Now figure out how long it would take you to value 850,000 if you have to do 100 per minute. So we can do this in an hour and a half or something in a couple of computers. So here's a nice application. There are a huge number, 850,000 fixed coupon. And this doesn't include the hybrid arms and the arms and everything else. It's a huge market. And you need speed and accuracy. Not to mention that you also want to get effective duration and convexity and everything else that comes out of this analysis that normally you couldn't get. I'll mention to you a couple of other applications of this system. There's a firm, you probably haven't heard about it. It's called Beacon Capital in New York. It started in January to have an electronic platform for MBS trading. It's for buy-side to buy-side. Insurance companies are buying and selling mortgage-backed securities to each other. They need some kind of a representative price intraday. So they're using us, and they seem to be very pleased with the level of accuracy that you get out of the system. Another application, and I think this is really very good for risk management because it's so fast and accurate, IFS, but some others using it, risk management firms. And real-time, what you can, the nice thing is once you have the speed, here's just one example. There's a system, you can look at it, called Muniverse. They have a portfolio system. You can put in a customer's portfolio, and you can do what-if scenarios. You can see what if rates go down, what if rates go up, what's the value, and instantaneously you can do 100 securities because the speed is so fast. So that's the story. It's a fairly new system, and few people have heard of it, and you're welcome. By the way, you can download. Do I have anything here? You can't even see it. But if you go to our, there's some references here. Oh, I'll take just a moment and tell you about the references. I mentioned to you that the, interestingly enough, the MBS and mortgage people know very little about the bond literature. Now, I was actually involved at the time I was at Bell Labs, and we developed this optimal bond calling methodology with a mathematician, Bill Boyce, at Bell Labs, which was published in 79. What's the optimum way of doing bond refunding? Not corporate bonds. If you go and look at the MBS literature, there's not one reference to this. Nobody's even heard of it, which is hard to understand. I don't take it personally, but I'm just reflecting on the fact that, of course, it's very hard to make progress if you don't know what has been done. And there are good tools that people could be using. The paper I mentioned to you is this Fabozzi, Yang, and Calote paper, which was in the Journal of Applied Finance, Journal of Theoretical and Applied Finance in 04. And then there are some other articles on refunding efficiency and more on managing mortgages. Again, my philosophy is if you understand mortgages, everything else is going to be much, much simpler. If you don't understand mortgages, you get a house of cards, and it will never work for MBS valuation. So if anybody's interested in downloading this program, and you can see for yourself how fast it is, just give me your card and I can email it to you. Okay, how am I doing then? I'm finished. Thank you. Any questions?